Good afternoon, everybody. I think we are ready to get going here. Thank you for coming. I hope you all enjoyed your lunch. It was delicious. All the food here is always good. So my name is Kim Steinbart. I'm one of the managers of Claire Health at BCLC, and I'm here to introduce our three speakers here today for this session called The Blockbuster Syndrome, Are You Ready for Industry Disruption? I think that's a pretty compelling title, so looking forward to hearing what these guys have to say. Before we start, I just want to remind you that we're using Slido, just like we did in the last session. So when you go into the Slido site, this is Ballroom C, so you want to select that one, and then you can enter your questions in there. So when we get to Q&A at the end, we'll go to the Slido questions, but you're also welcome to put your hand up and ask a question the old-fashioned way, too. So we have three speakers here today. All of them are with BCLC. This is Joss LeChasseur. He's a senior manager of strategic relationships. He has 20 years of experience in business development and currently leads key account and business development in the lottery division at BCLC. Joss has also played a key role in advancing the lottery business into new channels with new players. Tom Marischuk, at the end. Tom is Senior Manager of Casino Operations at BCLC. He's been with the company for more than 10 years in both the lottery and casino lines of business, and he now oversees casino operations at all of our gambling facilities and bingo locations across the province. In the middle is Stuart Gramotis. Stu is the Director of e-gaming at BCLC. He's worked in online gaming for over 15 years, eight of those with BCLC, and in his current role, he oversees the delivery of BCLC's online products and platforms. And please join me in welcoming our speakers today.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks, everybody, for coming. We were thinking we'd have an empty room, but we've got a pretty full group here. But thanks for having us. So as Kim said, my name is Joss LeChasseur. I work in lottery. If I step away from the mic, you probably can still hear me. I'm pretty loud. So I'll try to do my best to get through this and make it as interesting as I can. But I want to preface this presentation. It's very much like Al Gore style here. This is like a climate change conversation where I'm talking about the climate of our business and the state of some of the macro effects that are happening and changing our business and changing in the market that's going to affect us. And obviously there is a player health standpoint because that's how we communicate to our players currently is through our retail as well as these guys through e-commerce and casinos. So without further ado, I'll dive right in. So the easiest way for me to talk about this stuff is to talk about it in four ways. What the four things in lottery that keep me up at night. And I've been doing this business development key account thing for a long time. And the impacts of what's happening now are unprecedented. I've never seen anything like it. I was around in the market during 2008, saw a lot of nasty things happen then. And I've never seen anything like what's happening right now. So I bucket them into kind of four things that really worry me. As far as how our industry goes and where our industry is going, at least from a lottery standpoint, and I'll dive right in. So Monopoly, and it's not the Monopoly scratch and win game, it's not Monopoly in a casino, it's actually the fact that people within our industry and outside of our industry believe we have a monopoly, and that we should behave as such, and when you do behave like a monopoly, it tends to have impacts on your business and how you behave. And how we innovate, and how we change the way we do things, and how quickly we are to change the way that we do things when we believe that we can't be disrupted and we can't be changed because we have a monopoly in the gaming world. So that's one of the things that keeps me up at night, because these guys also, they weren't government-run gambling organizations, but they were in markets where they dominated their market. And I'm not going to talk too much about the taxi industry, although if you're from Vancouver, you know what's happening there and how difficult that transition is happening right now. The Marriott, the Airbnb, you guys have all heard and seen these things before. But because we're going to talk about Blockbuster, I know a little bit more about that situation. And just for those of you who don't know, I find it really interesting because they were as close to, in the private industry, as we are to a monopoly as really North America has ever seen. At one point in 2004, they had 9,000 locations in BC, and they owned 65 to 70% of the market. There were no other major chains that had any impact on them. You could open up a Rogers Video across the street, it wouldn't impact their business. They were very much a monopoly. And the funny thing about their business is that 4 years prior to 2004, they were approached by these guys to buy their business. And the Netflix guys had started their business primarily because one of the owners had a $40 late fee on his VHS. You know, and I'm dating myself, and he said, these late fees are crazy, I'm going to start my own business. And he started delivering VHSs to your house with no late fees. You could return them whenever you wanted. And it obviously transitioned into streaming. And this was all pre-year 2000. They have the successful business model, and they walk into Blockbuster head office, and they present their idea and the fact that they want to sell. You know, we started this business. You guys should want to be a part of this business. You should sell, or you should buy us. And funny enough, as the story goes, the CEO of Blockbuster sitting at the end of a long mahogany table, and they get to the page in the deck where they talk about how much they wanted for their business, which was $50 million. And he openly laughed. He openly laughed at them and felt it was a joke. And shortly thereafter, they were asked to leave. Obviously, we're not going to do this. And that was in the year 2000. They filed for bankruptcy protection in 2010. So in 10 years, well, actually 6 years, because in 2004 they were at their peak. In 6 years, they went from being the dominant player in their market to being irrelevant and gone. It happens that fast. And that is something where I was at a conference talking about disruption, and the first rule of disruption that they talk about is, when are you going to be disrupted? How do you know? Right? How do you know when your industry is going to get disrupted? Typically, there's arrogant behaviors and ideas about the fact that you can't be disrupted. Those are the number one indicators that you're likely going to get disrupted. Things are going to happen. And in our market, for those of you, has anyone here heard of Lottoland? Aside from me? Garth, you've heard of it? Few people have heard of it? This is only one of a few disruptors that are entering into our business. And they are, without getting into the whole scheme of it, Lottoland is an insurance scheme that sells lottery tickets from all jurisdictions around the world. So for anyone in BC, we had our first $70 million Lottomax jackpot last month. First time we've ever sold a Lottomax ticket that had the potential to win $70 million. Guess who else sold their first Lottomax ticket for $70 million? These guys. We have no opportunity to affect the players who are purchasing these tickets. We can't get messaging out to them. We cannot support them, and we don't make a penny off of it. This is a disruptor. Now, it hasn't impacted us in a way where our business is getting hammered yet, but it is something that is coming into the market. It hasn't been legitimized by a government, but for those of you who know the guy who runs the country south of us, all it takes is someone like that legitimizing a company like Lottoland as a competitor in the market, and all of a sudden our worlds change. Things change, right? Regulation changes, and we can be disrupted just like anybody else. So that's sort of the first thing. The second one is relevancy. And this, again, I go to a lot of these conferences and talk to other lottery jurisdictions, and relevancy is something that everybody worries about. We're essentially playing the same games that we played 30 years ago. Our parents' 649 game is the exact same game, except it's a dollar more than it was before. And when we look at it, I kind of feel like we're these guys, right? Every year, we get up in front of our organization and we talk about the state of our business and how great we are. When I started here 10 years ago working on Garth's team, our business was about $900 million, and now we're about $1.24 billion. Looks like we're doing pretty good. We've seen about a $300 million increase over that time. Everybody thinks we're doing well, but I think we're on the verge of something really bad happening. And I think that we are those frogs sitting in the hot water getting boiled alive. And the reason I think that is because there's a lot of disruption that's coming or is already in our market, but we haven't felt the impact of it yet. So is it a light at the end of the tunnel, or is it a train? At this point, it's hard to say, because we haven't realized what's happened. We haven't had the impacts. The house is on fire, and we're not sure if we're in it or if we're looking at it. And I came upon this cartoon, which talks about this is actually an ad in 1956, and I thought it was really cool when you talk about relevancy in our business. 1956, the dream was to play Scrabble in your car. Literally, get in the car with your kids, drive to church, and on the way, you turn around and you play Scrabble with your kids, self-driving cars. Hilarious. This is 1956. Doesn't seem real. Fast forward to 2020. If you own a Tesla, you own a self-driving car right now. The problem is, my kids don't know what Scrabble is. And even if they do know what Scrabble is, they don't want to play it with me. So it's not that the prediction was wrong, it's that the product's not relevant anymore to the audience. And so we need to be concerned about how relevant we are. And even though Lotto Max and 649 are driving our business here in BC and in Canada, we have to start thinking differently and thinking about where the business is going. And there was a study done in Atlantic Canada in 2010, and it was the first time I've seen one of these studies done where they look at and interview a group of players and ask them, you know, how much do you engage with our product? And then they go back to those exact same players 10 years later and ask them the exact same question, because there's a theory out there. And there's this pervasive theory. I have heard it in Dallas. I've heard it in Florida. I've heard it in Toronto. I've heard it everywhere, that lottery players become lottery players when they hit that sort of 35 to 40 years. They have a mortgage and children and stresses and all those things. And all of a sudden, the idea of $50 million jackpot starts to sound a whole lot better, and you convert people into lottery players. So 25-year-olds are drinking beer and going to the bar. They're never going to play lottery. But what we found in this study was that 50% of those 18 to 34s in 2010 were engaging with our product. 50%. Pretty good. Not bad. They interviewed those exact same people last year, end of last year. 50% are still playing our products. They're now in that age range where we would have thought we would have converted some of them. We haven't converted any of them. And then they went back and interviewed 18 to 34s now in 2019, and 20% are engaging with our products. So when we talk about relevancy, we got a relevancy problem. When the young people in the 18 to 34s, we see a 30% drop in play in that age group, that's a big deal. That's a big issue for us, and it's something we need to consider and we need to understand and realize that even though business is good today, our products are not relevant, at least in the way we present them today, with the next generation. And then the last piece is, in our business, we have a model here, at least here in BC and in Canada, where what we have done since I've started, and I can only speak for the last 10 years since I've been here, is we have taken our existing products and tried to wring more and more revenue out of the exact same products in maybe not the most responsible way. So you can look at the Keno business. When I came here, Keno was 5 minutes. 5 minutes, new game. 5 minutes, new game. We went from 5 minutes to 4 minutes. We went from 4 minutes to 3.5 minutes. Maybe great for revenue. We're making all-time highs in revenue for Keno. Not sure that's maybe the most responsible thing for our players. Did we think about that? How does that affect them? How does it affect them from a player health standpoint? Those are questions we need to ask before we just do something like that. What's more important? Is it the money? Is it the player? And we've done the same thing, and it's not Keno. I'm not picking on you. It is the same in all of our games. We have gone from set for life tickets that were $3, then they were $4, then they were $5. We make more money selling. Instead of selling to 10 people, we sell to 8 people. And from 8 people to 7 people, we're reaching deeper and deeper into lesser and less players' pockets. So that player who was spending $10 before is now spending $20. Not the best way to grow our business, not sustainable long-term, probably not where we want to be as a long-term strategy of how we're going to grow our business. So again, advocacy. This one's funny, actually. So, and this one affects me and actually calls out my team a little bit. Our job is to work with head offices, get people to sell our product, run programs, do all the things around getting our partners to advocate for our products. You know, put us up front, give us bigger display cases, put up Keno monitors, do all the things that are going to help maximize our business within our stores. Do it the right way, but we want them to advocate for us. We do research to make sure that they're going to advocate for our products and understand the value. How many people in this room know that in a grocery store that sells lottery at customer service, we are the number two selling product behind dairy? Who knows that? Funny enough, they don't know that. Because we're not integrated into their POS system, they don't see our product churning through the store. We're educating them all the time, so they will advocate for us. But guess what's happening right now? They aren't. And the business for them is changing everywhere. Home delivery, buy online, pick up in store, all of these things are happening in our market. Even 7-Eleven is delivering Slurpees to your house. Everybody is in this game, and guess how many partners in North America, this includes Kroger, this includes 7-Eleven, this includes everybody, guess how many have come to their local lottery jurisdiction and asked them to get on board? The answer is zero. Not one. Every single jurisdiction, or every single one of these customers are delivering cigarettes. They're delivering alcohol. They're in other age-controlled products, not ours. Why is that? We suffer from that issue around self-importance. We think we're important to them because we sell so much, they don't necessarily understand and advocate for our product, and our relevancy is declining with them as well. So it's not just our players, it's also our retailers. And then availability is kind of the last bastion of worry that I have. And it's funny because in the lottery division here in BC, we think we're right-sized. We have about 3,800 retailers, and we don't think we need any more. In fact, we have a program to make sure we've got the right retailers and the right amount, and we don't really want to get much further down that road. But we have a problem in our industry right now, and this is an actual graph of sales in a typical convenience store. In our convenience and gas, and we have an uncomfortable situation staring us in the face. And it actually has nothing to do with the lottery sales. And you can see, we're a pretty big dog, right? When you think about all those other categories combined, they don't even equal us, let alone tobacco at the top. But here's a kicker. As a parent who has a child who smokes, if they made it illegal, if the government came in and made it illegal to smoke in this country tomorrow, as a parent, I would be celebrating. I would think it's a great move. If they cut back, if they taxed it more, all the things to put mitigations on cigarettes, which I want to happen, we are one Trudeau away from something bad happening in that industry. And when that happens, this happens. And that is a customer right now, 7-Eleven, is about 8.5% of lottery sales in BC. They go down, we go down. It is that big of a deal. And so for us, it's not that I don't want them to do that or that it's not responsible. It's that there are impacts that we don't get to control. Someone else controls that. We have to be mindful that these are the things that are likely going to happen at some point. At some point, they're going to make cigarettes illegal. Let's be honest. They're killing people. It costs the healthcare system. It's a big problem. And at some point, they're going to continue to cut back until it's not even available anymore. So this is something that's coming, and it's real for us. I don't need to talk to anybody here in BC about this. The days of the gas vehicle are almost over here in BC. And in fact, in many places around the world, right? 125 million EVs will be on the road in 2030. Countries all over the world, and they're adding all the time, are deciding on a date. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. When will we no longer sell gas-powered vehicles in our market? And why does that matter to us? It's great, fantastic, except our business is largely dependent, our core business, on convenience and gas. And you can talk about Petro-Canada and all these gas stations electrifying, the electrification of their gas stations across the country, but quite honestly, it's a joke. It is a joke. And I'm not suggesting it's a joke because I think I know more than they do. I think it's a joke because I don't think it's real. I don't think they're investing a lot of money. They're doing it for the wrong reasons. They're doing it because they want people to come and buy their gas, because electric power will never be relevant in a gas station. And the reason being, already right now, most electric vehicles can go between 100, actually 40, and about 200 kilometers range. The range is quite small. It's growing every year. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And even now, with that limited range, 75% of electric vehicle charging happens at home. 20% happens at work. 5% happens everywhere else. How many people fuel up at home with their gas-powered vehicle? Farmers do. Less than 1%. It is not a relevant conversation to have. People will not pay 30 cents a minute, which is what Petro-Can is planning to charge, for their electricity at their gas station when they can do it at home. And why would they? And when the range of your car is 1,000 kilometers, why would you need to? Right? Why would you ever need to? So the relevancy of gas stations is going to change. It is going to affect us, and there will be attrition in that market. I would bet in Vancouver alone, with the real estate prices here, attrition will probably be around 25 to 50%. And that will impact our business in a big way. Same-day delivery. Delivery, right? Delivery, grocery stores. This stuff, right? Click and collect. This is a growing, actually, I'm going to go back to this one, actually. The reason this one is relevant, because these guys are ahead of everyone right now. Everyone knows this, Save-On Foods. They're the big BC. We have 160 locations here in BC. I put this one up here first, even though Loblaws, this guy here, they're the biggest grocery retailer in the country. This guy here, Walmart, everyone knows these guys. But Overweighty is further down the road as far as dependencies in their business. They have actually gotten over the cost-saving model, and they're making money on home delivery now. It now makes up, e-commerce for them is 10% of their overall sales, 10%. Now, for those of you who understand the laws of diffusion of innovation, so innovation comes into the market, and it sort of goes on a scale like this until it hits major pickup. That number is usually around 15%. Overweight is at 10 already. So I bring these guys in to talk to my leadership and say, guys, they leave, they present, they're like, it's 10% of our business. I'm like, what'd you take out of that? What'd you guys think of that presentation? They're like, oh, it's great, it's really good, you know, 10%, wow, I didn't know it was that big. I'm like, no, you need to understand, they are 5% away from hitting the early majority. And every sale that happens here right now in every jurisdiction in North America, we sell zero lottery tickets. None. So every customer they convert, when they convert you from a walk into the store, wait in line, buy your groceries, pick up your lottery ticket, when they convert you from that to buy online where you pull up in your car and they walk out to you, or you order it online and it's delivered to your house, we don't have an opportunity to sell to them. We don't have a digital ticket that we can put on a Save-On Foods website. We aren't there yet. We want to get there, but we're not there yet. It is a big, big concern for us, and this is happening really fast. Faster than we're willing to react, right? We're very slow, very bureaucratic. It's very difficult. This one, and again, I'm going to not belabor the point, but there's 1,000 locations like this in Canada. This is Shoppers Drug Mart, and they're like Walgreens in the States. They're a big drugstore. This is a picture of a store downtown, not far from here, actually. It's just down the street. They have 25 of these stores. They're experimenting in BC right now, where for 4 hours a day, there are no attendants. No one, unless you go to the pharmacy or cosmetics, you actually can't buy anything unless you go through self-checkout. We don't sell lottery in self-checkout. And even if we did, we would only be able to sell certain products because our tickets are live, we can't sell scratch there, there's all kinds of limitations. So right now, for 4 hours a day in 25 of these stores, with no conversation with us, they decided they're not going to have their tills open anymore. So basically, you might as well turn off the lottery terminal because we can't sell. Impacts our business. And lastly, this guy, Jeff Bezos, everybody's buddy. He is waiting in the wings right now. And this guy, we're going to call him the big disruptor. And when you talk to any of our grocery partners, you talk to 7-Eleven, you talk to all of our retail partners, all they want to talk about is him. And they want to talk about what's coming. And it's not necessarily Amazon Go. It's not necessarily any of that. What it is the business model that comes with him. And the business model is Prime. And Prime is free delivery if you're a Prime member. And right now, those guys charge $8, $6 to $8 a delivery right now, and most of them lose money. And now you're going to take that away? To be competitive with him, you're going to have to take that away. And he's installing these in people's houses where they will put a code in, walk in, put your groceries away for you, into your fridge, and walk out and wave to you in the camera as they walk out. This is already here. And he right now charges $200, but rumors are he's going to give it away for free. You use my tech, you can have it for free. You can have the doorbell, you can have two cameras, you can have the lock, you can have it all. Just give us access. Order stuff from us. This is coming. This will affect us. And guess what Amazon doesn't do right now, nor do they want to do? Sell lottery. They're not in the lottery game. They have no desire to be in the lottery game. They don't plan to be in the lottery game. And truthfully, we can't sell to them anyways right now. We don't have a product, a digital product that we can sell through their website right now. And so I guess I built this presentation not for this conference. So I'm trying to create the view of our market, which is what the whole presentation was about. But it does affect and does have an impact on what we do from a responsible gaming standpoint, because if we're not relevant to our current partners, and let's be honest, brochures and you know, table tents and things that we have in our retail stores right now are not effective anymore. When only 20% of the millennials are engaging with our products, that's not helping us. That's not getting the message where we need to get it. We have Keno players out there who are spending $30,000 a year on our product, and now they're doing it online, right? In casinos, we've got live dealer. You don't even need to go to the casino where we can say, hey, man, do you need some help? We don't even do that anymore. We have some issues in our game. With the changing market, we need to change the way we talk to our players, the way we talk to our retailers, how we get everybody on board, be getting our retailers to advocate for us, advocate responsible gaming, advocate through their websites, use the power that they have. And I know that the cool part is actually P360 is one of the programs that we're launching here in BCLC, and it addresses some of these things. We think that the getting to our partners is going to help us get there. It's going to be able to utilize their power to get us where we want to go and get the message out where we need it to be. So we need to change. We need to move forward. The business is changing whether we want it to or not. And that's kind of it. I'm going to take a lot of those questions and a lot of the things that keep me up at night. I'm going to ask these two guys here, Stu and Tom, some of the same questions. I'll stand here and I don't know if we're going to hand this out. We'll get to questions after I kind of ask them a few questions, because their business is a lot different than mine, and I think they might have some different answers to some of those questions. So, Tom, why don't we start at the top with you? So, I talked about monopoly and how we view ourselves as a monopoly, and it affects the way we go to market. It affects all those things. And between the two, you've kind of got clicks versus bricks, right? You got clicks here and bricks here. I don't know how that impacts and how you guys feel about that, if that's something that keeps you up at night, but why don't you share your thoughts on the monopoly?
I mean, okay, thank you. If we just look at casinos and we just look at slot machines and tables, then you could probably make the argument that that's how we sort of would see ourselves, as having that gambling business. But I think what we've decided to do and how we've sort of positioned ourselves is to be in that entertainment industry. We want to, you know, a lot of our advertising is about a night out. We've built a lot of amenities in our casino properties. It's having a more holistic view as to what we do in our business. So I'm with you. I don't, you know, we talk monopoly. I don't believe it exists there. We have multiple service providers that compete with each other based off their different products and their different offerings. They offer their products in different ways, even though the product may be the same. So the types of things that kind of keep me up with it is, you know, lately legislation has been a big one. It's really, you know, disrupted how we are able to offer our products and where we've had success in the past, and the changes we've had to make and the impact that has had on our players. It's certainly changed the player behavior and access to our facilities. So that's definitely one. I'd agree with you on digging deeper into the pockets. Our games are not getting cheaper. They're getting, you know, more expensive to play. The cost per spins, and they're being designed that way, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, I think we all have to understand that it's a business at the end of the day, and we're trying we're trying to make money, but we're trying to balance all the other decisions that we've got to make along the way. That would be a sort of another piece from a cost standpoint. And something that just stood out to me as you were presenting this piece that I hadn't put it, I've seen the presentation before, and I hadn't really put it together, but the speed change can suddenly happen to you. I think impacts your ability to make your changes the right way. So what I mean by that, when we're trying to tie that back into player health, or we're trying to healthy play, when all of a sudden the pressures and you start to get squeezed a little bit and you have to make adjustments fast, you may overlook some of those things that are really, really important when you want to think about the long-term health of your players and the long-term health of an industry. You may push some of those off to the side just because you're trying to chase something. And it could be because there's a lot of livelihoods that are involved with it. It could be because there's a lot of contracts. It could be that somebody's 5 years away from retirement, and you know, by the time that everything's integrated, they're going to be off in the sunset sitting in Florida. So I do get concerned about that idea that we get disrupted very, very quickly, and instead of making the right decisions from literally almost like a moral place, that we start to just make them to chase the dollars. And I don't think it serves our players, and I don't think it serves our industry over the long term.
So, Stu, same kind of question, but for you guys, in your world, I would perceive anyways that you've got competitors all over the place, gray market competitors, right? How does that affect you guys, that whole monopoly? Because you don't really have a monopoly, do you?
Yeah, I would say that we have the exact opposite of monopoly. In a lot of cases, we're actually disadvantaged in certain ways. So if you look at online poker, for an example, we don't have international liquidity because the rules stipulate that we can only have players within Canada when we have an agreement with other provinces that are operating on the same platform. poker stars can have international liquidity. So in poker, we're still single digit of the marketplace. Sports is another example where we can't offer single event sports wagering where our competitors do because they don't decide to follow the Criminal Code of Canada. So they're able to offer a product in a much more player-friendly way than we're able to offer it. One of the most interesting spaces, I think, is actually player health. And when you look at player health and the impacts that it's having on online gambling, and I look to the UK as a great example, because in the UK, they've taken some great steps in the space of player health to block credit cards for online gambling. They've taken some great steps to move forward and to start to put some restrictions and some enhanced education and things of that nature out there. And in some of those cases, the education, the support, the guidance that they're providing their players, it's very beneficial and the players are welcoming it with open arms. In the case of something like a credit card ban, what they've seen is a couple behaviors have developed. So one of the behaviors that's developed is customers will go onto their bank's website, they'll do a cash advance from their credit card to their bank account, and then they'll deposit from their bank account. So the only real winner there is the bank. The customer's paying more fees and the money's ended up being played anyways. And worse than that, if you look at Canada, where we have the gray market, that they don't subscribe to any of the regulations that we have in Canada. As we put new rules in place, the competitors just don't follow. So if you were to look at something like a credit card ban, we've seen a huge move away from credit card, where it used to be by far and away the number one deposit method. We've seen people move to debit, which is great to see people doing that, because we know that credit card comes with an inherent risk for players playing on credit. But what happens is if we put those types of rules in place, players quickly jump ship to the gray market or to the black market. And the challenge there is it's not just about the lost revenue, it's about the lost protections for the customer. When a customer goes to a Bodog or they go to a LeoVegas, we have no ability to support them. If they develop a problem, they don't have the responsible gambling measures that we put in place to support our players. They don't have the education that we put to support our players. So what happens is, in many cases, we're actually putting our players into at more risk, because we're pushing them into different environments where we can't help them. So when I look at, you know, our position in the marketplace, I think it's absolutely essential that we do everything we can to support, educate, help our players along with healthy play. But we always have to have that balance to make sure that we're not pushing our players into the waiting arms of other players, other companies out there that don't have their best interests at heart.
Well, before you pass it back to Tom, from a relevancy standpoint, what would you say is your biggest concern, future forward? Right now, you guys are kind of you're dabbling in pretty much all the different parts of casino and lottery and that. What do you think you need to do from a relevancy standpoint to get to those younger players, or is that where you want to go, right?
Yeah, for relevancy for the online space, I think our biggest concern and the biggest reality of digital is how quickly things are moving. So when you look at the online gambling space, and especially in government-run online gambling, there's an immense amount of regulation, there's an immense amount of controls and things that need to be in place to ensure that the player is protected, whether it's for cybersecurity, whether it's for player health or all these other measures. But what you see is in the other industries out there in the digital space, things are moving so quickly. So what's happening is customers, not just in the gambling space, but across all digital platforms and all digital media, the expectations of customers are escalating at a much faster rate than a lot of companies can keep up with. And you see this all the time, where a company that was once the darling of everybody out there all of a sudden is no longer relevant. And the reason for that is that they haven't kept up with the digital trends, they haven't kept up with the technology. And that becomes even more difficult to do in a regulated space, because when you look at the platforms that we employ to offer online gambling, there's a significant amount behind the scenes in regards to cybersecurity. There's a significant amount of rigor that goes into putting a mobile app out. If your mobile app is to reserve a car with Uber, there's some level of security, but that level of security is nowhere near the level of security you need in the online gambling space. So as soon as you have a gambling transaction occurring on a digital platform, the need of all those different components of security and regulation just increases exponentially. So what we see is one of our biggest risks is as customers start to have those increasing expectations of what a digital experience looks like, can we keep up? So it's not even just about our industry, it's just technology in general, and that's one of the biggest things that keeps us up at night.
Good afternoon, everybody. I think we are ready to get going here. Thank you for coming. I hope you all enjoyed your lunch. It was delicious. All the food here is always good. So my name is Kim Steinbart. I'm one of the managers of Claire Health at BCLC, and I'm here to introduce our three speakers here today for this session called The Blockbuster Syndrome. Are you ready for industry disruption? I think that's a pretty compelling title, so looking forward to hearing what these guys have to say. Before we start, I just want to remind you that we're using Slido, just like we did in the last session. So when you go into the Slido site, this is Ballroom C, so you want to select that one, and then you can enter your questions in there. So when we get to Q&A at the end, we'll go to the Slido questions, but you're also welcome to put your hand up and ask a question the old-fashioned way, too. So we have three speakers here today. All of them are with BCLC. This is Joss LeChasseur. He's a senior manager of strategic relationships. He has 20 years of experience in business development and currently leads key account and business development in the lottery division at BCLC. Joss has also played a key role in advancing the lottery business into new channels with new players. Tom Marischuk, at the end. Tom is Senior Manager of Casino Operations at BCLC. He's been with the company for more than 10 years in both the lottery and casino lines of business, and he now oversees casino operations at all of our gambling facilities and bingo locations across the province. In the middle is Stuart Gramotis. Stu is the Director of e-gaming at BCLC. He's worked in online gaming for over 15 years, eight of those with BCLC, and in his current role, he oversees the delivery of BCLC's online products and platforms. And please join me in welcoming our speakers today.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks, everybody, for coming. We were thinking we'd have an empty room, but we've got a pretty full group here. But thanks for having us. So as Kim said, my name is Joss LeChasseur. I work in lottery. If I step away from the mic, you probably can still hear me. I'm pretty loud, so I'll try to do my best to get through this and make it as interesting as I can. But I want to preface this presentation. It's very much like Al Gore style here. This is like a climate change conversation where I'm talking about the climate of our business and the state of some of the macro effects that are happening and changing our business and changing in the market that's going to affect us. And obviously there is a player health standpoint because that's how we communicate to our players currently is through our retail as well as these guys through e-commerce and casinos. So without further ado, I'll dive right in. So the easiest way for me to talk about this stuff is to talk about it in four ways. What the four things in lottery that keep me up at night. And I've been doing this business development key account thing for a long time. And the impacts of what's happening now are unprecedented. I've never seen anything like it. I was around in the market during 2008, saw a lot of nasty things happen then. And I've never seen anything like what's happening right now. So I bucket them into kind of four things that really worry me. As far as how our industry goes and where our industry is going, at least from a lottery standpoint, and I'll dive right in. So Monopoly, and it's not the Monopoly scratch and win game, it's not Monopoly in a casino, it's actually the fact that people within our industry and outside of our industry believe we have a monopoly, and that we should behave as such, and when you do behave like a monopoly, it tends to have impacts on your business and how you behave, and how we innovate, and how we change the way we do things, and how quickly we are to change the way that we do things when we believe that we can't be disrupted and we can't be changed because we have a monopoly in the gaming world. So that's one of the things that keeps me up at night, because these guys also, they weren't government-run gambling organizations, but they were in markets where they dominated their market. And I'm not going to talk too much about the taxi industry, although if you're from Vancouver, you know what's happening there and how difficult that transition is happening right now. The Marriott, the Airbnb, you guys have all heard and seen these things before. But because we're going to talk about Blockbuster, I know a little bit more about that situation. And just for those of you who don't know, I find it really interesting because they were as close to, in the private industry, as we are to a monopoly as really North America's ever seen. At one point in 2004, they had 9,000 locations in BC, and they owned 65 to 70% of the market. There were no other major chains that had any impact on them. You could open up a Rogers Video across the street, it wouldn't impact their business. They were very much a monopoly. And the funny thing about their business is that 4 years prior to 2004, they were approached by these guys to buy their business. And the Netflix guys had started their business primarily because one of the owners had a $40 late fee on his VHS. You know, and I'm dating myself, and he said, these late fees are crazy. I'm going to start my own business. And he started delivering VHSs to your house with no late fees. You could return them whenever you wanted. And it obviously transitioned into streaming. And this was all pre-year 2000. They have the successful business model, and they walk into Blockbuster head office, and they present their idea and the fact that they want to sell. You know, we started this business. You guys should want to be a part of this business. You should sell, or you should buy us. And funny enough, as the story goes, the CEO of Blockbuster sitting at the end of a long mahogany table, and they get to the page in the deck where they talk about how much they wanted for their business, which was $50 million. And he openly laughed. He openly laughed at them and felt it was a joke. And shortly thereafter, they were asked to leave. Obviously, we're not going to do this. And that was in the year 2000. They filed for bankruptcy protection in 2010. So in 10 years, well, actually 6 years, because in 2004 they were at their peak. In 6 years, they went from being the dominant player in their market to being irrelevant and gone. It happens that fast. And that is something where I was at a conference talking about disruption, and the first rule of disruption that they talk about is, when are you going to be disrupted? How do you know? Right? How do you know when your industry is going to get disrupted? Typically, there's arrogant behaviors and ideas about the fact that you can't be disrupted. Those are the number one indicators that you're likely going to get disrupted. Things are going to happen. And in our market, for those of you, has anyone here heard of Lottoland, aside from me? Garth, you've heard of it? A few people have heard of it? This is only one of a few disruptors that are entering into our business. And they are, without getting into the whole scheme of it, Lottoland is an insurance scheme that sells lottery tickets from all jurisdictions around the world. So for anyone in BC, we had our first $70 million Lotto Max jackpot last month. First time we've ever sold a Lotto Max ticket that had the potential to win $70 million. Guess who else sold their first Lotto Max ticket for $70 million? These guys. We have no opportunity to affect the players who are purchasing these tickets. We can't get messaging out to them. We cannot support them, and we don't make a penny off of it. This is a disruptor. Now, it hasn't impacted us in a way where our business is getting hammered yet, but it is something that is coming into the market. It hasn't been legitimized by a government, but for those of you who know the guy who runs the country south of us, all it takes is someone like that legitimizing a company like Lottoland as a competitor in the market, and all of a sudden our worlds change. Things change, right? Regulation changes, and we can be disrupted just like anybody else. So that's sort of the first thing. The second one is relevancy. And this, again, I go to a lot of these conferences and talk to other lottery jurisdictions, and relevancy is something that everybody worries about. We're essentially playing the same games that we played 30 years ago. Our parents' 649 game is the exact same game, except it's a dollar more than it was before. And when we look at it, I kind of feel like we're these guys, right? Every year, we get up in front of our organization and we talk about the state of our business and how great we are. When I started here 10 years ago working on Garth's team, our business was about $900 million, and now we're about $1.24 billion. Looks like we're doing pretty good. We've seen about a $300 million increase over that time. Everybody thinks we're doing well, but I think we're on the verge of something really bad happening. And I think that we are those frogs sitting in the hot water getting boiled alive. And the reason I think that is because there's a lot of disruption that's coming or is already in our market, but we haven't felt the impact of it yet. So is it a light at the end of the tunnel, or is it a train? At this point, it's hard to say because we haven't realized what's happened. We haven't had the impacts. The house is on fire, and we're not sure if we're in it or if we're looking at it. And I came upon this cartoon, which talks about this is actually an ad in 1956, and I thought it was really cool when you talk about relevancy in our business. 1956, the dream was to play Scrabble in your car. Literally, get in the car with your kids, drive to church, and on the way you turn around and you play Scrabble with your kids, self-driving cars. Hilarious. This is 1956. Doesn't seem real. Fast forward to 2020. If you own a Tesla, you own a self-driving car right now. The problem is, my kids don't know what Scrabble is. And even if they do know what Scrabble is, they don't want to play it with me. So it's not that the prediction was wrong, it's that the product's not relevant anymore to the audience. And so we need to be concerned about how relevant we are. And even though Lotto Max and 649 are driving our business here in BC and in Canada, we have to start thinking differently and thinking about where the business is going. And there was a study done in Atlantic Canada in 2010, and it was the first time I've seen one of these studies done where they look at and interview a group of players and ask them, you know, how much do you engage with our product? And then they go back to those exact same players 10 years later and ask them the exact same question, because there's a theory out there. And there's this pervasive theory. I have heard it in Dallas. I've heard it in Florida. I've heard it in Toronto. I've heard it everywhere. That lottery players become lottery players when they hit that sort of 35 to 40 years. They have a mortgage and children and stresses and all those things. And all of a sudden, the idea of $50 million jackpots starts to sound a whole lot better. And you convert people into lottery players. So 25-year-olds are drinking beer and going to the bar. They're never going to play lottery. But what we found in this study was that 50% of those 18 to 34s in 2010 were engaging with our product. 50%. Pretty good. Not bad. They interviewed those exact same people last year, end of last year. 50% are still playing our products. They're now in that age range where we would have thought we would have converted some of them. We haven't converted any of them. And then they went back and interviewed 18 to 34s now in 2019, and 20% are engaging with our products. So when we talk about relevancy, we got a relevancy problem. When the young people in the 18 to 34s, we see a 30% drop in play in that age group, that's a big deal. That's a big issue for us, and it's something we need to consider and we need to understand and realize that even though business is good today, our products are not relevant, at least in the way we present them today, with the next generation. And then the last piece is, in our business, we have a model here, at least here in BC and in Canada, where what we have done since I've started, and I can only speak for the last 10 years since I've been here, is we have taken our existing products and tried to wring more and more revenue out of the exact same products in maybe not the most responsible way. So you can look at the Keno business. When I came here, Keno was 5 minutes. 5 minutes, new game. 5 minutes, new game. We went from 5 minutes to 4 minutes. We went from 4 minutes to 3.5 minutes. Maybe great for revenue. We're making all-time highs in revenue for Keno. Not sure that's maybe the most responsible thing for our players. Did we think about that? How does that affect them? How does it affect them from a player health standpoint? Those are questions we need to ask before we just do something like that. What's more important? Is it the money? Is it the player? And we've done the same thing, and it's not Keno. I'm not picking on you. It is the same in all of our games. We have gone from set for life tickets that were $3, then they were $4, then they were $5. We make more money selling. Instead of selling to 10 people, we sell to 8 people. And from 8 people to 7 people, we're reaching deeper and deeper into lesser and less players' pockets. So that player who was spending $10 before is now spending $20. Not the best way to grow our business, not sustainable long-term, probably not where we want to be as a long-term strategy of how we're going to grow our business. So again, advocacy. This one's funny, actually. So, and this one affects me and actually calls out my team a little bit. Our job is to work with head offices, get people to sell our product, run programs, do all the things around getting our partners to advocate for our products. You know, put us up front, give us bigger display cases, put up Keno monitors, do all the things that are going to help maximize our business within our stores. Do it the right way, but we want them to advocate for us. We do research to make sure that they're going to advocate for our products and understand the value. How many people in this room know that in a grocery store that sells a lottery at customer service, we are the number two selling product behind dairy? Who knows that? Funny enough, they don't know that. Because we're not integrated into their POS system, they don't see our product churning through the store. We're educating them all the time, so they will advocate for us. But guess what's happening right now? They aren't. And the business for them is changing everywhere. Home delivery, buy online, pick up in store, all of these things are happening in our market. Even 7-Eleven is delivering Slurpees to your house. Everybody is in this game, and guess how many partners in North America, this includes Kroger, this includes 7-Eleven, this includes everybody, guess how many have come to their local lottery jurisdiction and ask them to get on board? The answer is zero. Not one. Every single jurisdiction or every single one of these customers are delivering cigarettes. They're delivering alcohol. They're in other age control products, not ours. Why is that? We suffer from that issue around self-importance. We think we're important to them because we sell so much. They don't necessarily understand and advocate for our product, and our relevancy is declining with them as well. So it's not just our players, it's also our retailers. And then availability is kind of the last bastion of worry that I have. And it's funny because in the lottery division here in BC, we think we're right-sized. We have about 3,800 retailers, and we don't think we need any more. In fact, we have a program to make sure we've got the right retailers and the right amount, and we don't really want to get much further down that road. But we have a problem in our industry right now, and this is an actual graph of sales in a typical convenience store, in our convenience and gas, and we have an uncomfortable situation staring us in the face. And it actually has nothing to do with the lottery sales. And you can see we're a pretty big dog, right? When you think about all those other categories combined, they don't even equal us, let alone tobacco at the top. But here's a kicker. As a parent who has a child who smokes, if they made it illegal, if the government came in and made it illegal to smoke in this country tomorrow, as a parent, I would be celebrating. I would think it's a great move. If they cut back, if they taxed it more, all the things to put mitigations on cigarettes, which I want to happen, we are one Trudeau away from something bad happening in that industry. And when that happens, this happens. And that is a customer right now, 7-Eleven, is about 8.5% of lottery sales in BC. They go down, we go down. It is that big of a deal. And so for us, it's not that I don't want them to do that or that it's not responsible. It's that there are impacts that we don't get to control. Someone else controls that. We have to be mindful that these are the things that are likely going to happen at some point. At some point, they're going to make cigarettes illegal. Let's be honest. They're killing people. It costs the healthcare system. It's a big problem. And at some point, they're going to continue to cut back until it's not even available anymore. So this is something that's coming, and it's real for us. I don't need to talk to anybody here in BC about this. The days of the gas vehicle are almost over here in BC. And in fact, in many places around the world, right? 125 million EVs will be on the road in 2030. Countries all over the world, and they're adding all the time, are deciding on a date. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. When will we no longer sell gas-powered vehicles in our market? And why does that matter to us? It's great, fantastic, except our business is largely dependent, our core business, on convenience and gas. And you can talk about Petro-Canada and all these gas stations electrifying, the electrification of their gas stations across the country, but quite honestly, it's a joke. It is a joke. And I'm not suggesting it's a joke because I think I know more than they do. I think it's a joke because I don't think it's real. I don't think they're investing a lot of money. They're doing it for the wrong reasons. They're doing it because they want people to come and buy their gas, because electric power will never be relevant in a gas station. And the reason being, already right now, most electric vehicles can go between 100, actually 40, and about 200 kilometers range. The range is quite small. It's growing every year. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And even now, with that limited range, 75% of electric vehicle charging happens at home. 20% happens at work. 5% happens everywhere else. How many people fuel up at home with their gas-powered vehicle? Farmers do. Less than 1%. It is not a relevant conversation to have. People will not pay 30 cents a minute, which is what Petro-Can is planning to charge, for their electricity at their gas station when they can do it at home. And why would they? And when the range of your car is 1,000 kilometers, why would you need to? Right? Why would you ever need to? So the relevancy of gas stations is going to change. It is going to affect us, and there will be attrition in that market. I would bet in Vancouver alone, with the real estate prices here, attrition will probably be around 25 to 50%. And that will impact our business in a big way. Same day delivery, right? Delivery, grocery stores. This stuff, right? Click and collect. This is a growing. Actually, I'm going to go back to this one, actually. The reason this one is relevant, because these guys are ahead of everyone right now. Everyone knows the Save-On Foods. They're the big BC. We have 160 locations here in BC. I put this one up here first, even though Loblaws, this guy here, they're the biggest grocery retailer in the country. This guy here, Walmart, everyone knows these guys. But Overweighty is further down the road as far as dependencies in their business. They have actually gotten over the cost-saving model, and they're making money on home delivery now. It now makes up, e-commerce for them is 10% of their overall sales, 10%. Now, for those of you who understand the laws of diffusion of innovation, so innovation comes into the market, and it sort of goes on a scale like this until it hits major pickup. That number is usually around 15%. Overweight is at 10 already. So I bring these guys in to talk to my leadership and say, guys, they leave, they present, they're like, it's 10% of our business. I'm like, what'd you take out of that? What'd you guys think of that presentation? They're like, oh, it's great, it's really good. You know, 10%, wow, I didn't know it was that big. I'm like, no, you need to understand they are 5% away from hitting the early majority. And every sale that happens here right now in every jurisdiction in North America, we sell zero lottery tickets, none. So every customer they convert, when they convert you from a walk into the store, wait in line, buy your groceries, pick up your lottery ticket, when they convert you from that to buy online where you pull up in your car and they walk out to you, or you order it online, it's delivered to your house, we don't have an opportunity to sell to them. We don't have a digital ticket that we can put on a Save-On Foods website. We aren't there yet. We want to get there, but we're not there yet. It is a big, big concern for us, and this is happening really fast. Faster than we're willing to react, right? We're very slow, very bureaucratic. It's very difficult. This one, and again, I'm going to not belabor the point, but there's 1,000 locations like this in Canada. This is Shoppers Drug Mart, and they're like Walgreens in the States. They're a big drugstore. This is a picture of a store downtown, not far from here, actually. It's just down the street. They have 25 of these stores. They're experimenting in BC right now, where for 4 hours a day, there are no attendants. No one, unless you go to the pharmacy or cosmetics, you actually can't buy anything unless you go through self-checkout. We don't sell lottery in self-checkout. And even if we did, we would only be able to sell certain products because our tickets are live, we can't sell scratch there, there's all kinds of limitations. So right now, for 4 hours a day in 25 of these stores, with no conversation with us, they decided they're not going to have their tills open anymore. So basically, you might as well turn off the lottery terminal because we can't sell. Impacts our business. And lastly, this guy, Jeff Bezos, everybody's buddy. He is waiting in the wings right now. And this guy, we're going to call him the big disruptor. And when you talk to any of our grocery partners, you talk to 7-Eleven, you talk to all of our retail partners, all they want to talk about is